You're listening to Those Two Dads Podcast. Now, here's your hosts, Josh and Kyle.
What's up, brother?
Hey, buddy.
Welcome back, guys.
Yeah, we are back. Another awesome episode coming up here. It's going to be great.
Yes, sir. So, Josh, check it out. So, on this podcast, on TTD, we really appreciate an all-purpose type of dad, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like a jack-of-all-trades type of guy.
Absolutely.
What do you say? Right?
For sure.
Yeah, dude. And I think that's a Chris Meyer type. And so that's who our guest is today, guys. We're talking with Chris Meyer. Chris grew up in Pleasantville, New York. He's a New Yorker. He asked us if he could cuss on the show. I mean, yeah.
Come on. Right? I can tell when someone asks if they can cuss on the show, it's going to be good.
It's raw and real. So here we go. So Chris, before we jump in, I'll tell you a little bit about him. So he's grew up in Pleasantville, New York, been a licensed New York State attorney for over 30 years. That's like, you know, one jack of trade, right? Then in that time, he's also owned multiple funeral homes, number two, written multiple books, including one called Life in 20 Lessons, number three, written multiple screenplays, you know, number four. I don't know, like, do we need the counting lessons for some
right. people? And even do we get the Rolodex out, right?
Right. He's even created websites around finance and fitness. And so when it comes to being an entrepreneur, no one quite does it like Chris. And through all of it, he's a pretty awesome dad too. You know, wouldn't be on the show otherwise. Even coached basketball for his kids. So come join us while we dip into the world of this man's many skills, right? And so here we are, Mr. Chris Meyer.
Hi, guys.
Welcome thank you to for the show, me. Brother.
We appreciate it. I appreciate you having me. It's so nice to be here.
Right on. Yeah. Thanks again. No, we're super excited to have you.
This is interesting, too, because one of the things that I just real quick, and then Kyle will let you finish up here. But
I didn't really have that profound of a thought.
You're a well-oiled machine here.
Yeah. But no, one of the things that was interesting that caught my eye when, you know, we were looking over the information and having you on the show was I was reading the kind of the bio, and I was like, okay, the guy's written some books. He's written some screenplays. He's owned funeral homes. He's an attorney. I'm like, who is this dude?
Yeah, right. A little obnoxious, isn't it? Yeah.
I don't know. I think obnoxious is probably like, That's probably a little overboard for that. I'd say you're just a wealth of knowledge.
Well,
because there's got to be something there.
I think. Thank you, first of all. So, like I said, I think it's more about having an unquiet mind, really. You know, and not being able to relax fully. You guys know you have children. That helps a lot. You know, it motivates you, and. You know, again, the funeral home, probably the greatest gift, reminding me day in and day out of the temporalness of the shortness of our lives, and what a gift it has been to me, and encouraging me or pushing me to just go home and be involved in my children's lives in any way, shape, or form. And I have taken that. I've been 17 years now in the funeral industry, and I have taken that to heart. My first one, my baby boy, is about to go to college. So I'm a little bit, it sounds like a little bit more ahead of you guys. And that's why I'm here to share drop some of the pearls, as they say, or drop some
knowledge. Yeah, you're just a wee bit ahead of me.
Yeah, a wee bit. Yeah, my oldest is 13, so a little behind that game. But, you know, the thing that's really cool is we've had a few people on here that have had different ranges of kids, you know, some that are younger than ours, some that are older than ours, some that their kids are grown, like one of our good friends, Alan, you know, he came on here and he talked about how his kids are all grown up and they're all moving on. I think his youngest was just graduating high school shortly or whatever the case was, or going into college. But it's just interesting to see different perspectives, right? Because, you know, we've been through the younger years, and now some of those people that are in those younger years, we're like, oh yeah, you know, that totally makes sense.
Do it all over again.
Right. Yeah. Right. You're coming up and doing it again.
Yeah.
Another one on the way.
Oh, is that right? Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, you know, I talked to my wife about that. You know, hey, I'm ready if you want. She's like, hell no. And, you know, she likes the graduating of it all. And I'm no, I'm the softie. I could go back and start it all over. I mean, there's a passage in one of my books. I'm the ultimate softie. I would relive it again tomorrow. And look, it was super special. It was exhausting, as you guys very well know.
Oh yeah.
But man, what a time of life. And I'm a dad through and through. I love it. It is the most important thing to me. I think from a very young age, I knew that I loved children, and I had great parents as role models. And I just try to be as much as I can without being too annoying in my children's lives. But that's a line of demarcation is a little bit raw sometimes.
Yeah. Well, I have to comment because when I remember when we were getting this all scheduled, and we have questions like in our scheduling tool, and one of the questions was, is there anything we should know before our thing? And all it said was, I'm dad AF. And I was like,
I did.
That's kind of guy right here.
Yeah. No, that's me, and that's who I want to be. I don't care because, you know, when it's all over, I know it's going to be all over someday, but when it is, you know, who's going to be there? That's what I always say. Who's going to be on your deathbed, right? And those are the people that you want to foster the relationships with when we're here. And, you know, I think as young men, we always think these grandiose plans, more friends, bigger parties, you know, buy this and that. And I think as you mature, you start to see that, you know, the really important things in life are those small things, those small moments. And that's what I have enjoyed. And I said it earlier, the funeral industry taught me that because I was hearing it from people every day saying to me, Chris, take your time, go home, be with your children. It's such a short span of time. And in looking back on this, as you know, we have the seminal moment in my child's life, graduation from high school, it feels so freaking fast.
Yeah.
I mean, where did those 17, 18 years go? And I'm sure some of you guys feel that way. You know, even where you're stationed in life, it's just, holy crap. Yeah. Where did it all go? And it's like that. And I, you know, I have 83-year-old parents, very healthy, very vibrant. And I had my mom say the greatest thing to me about life. And I said, you know, Mom, tell me, at 82, what are you thinking about? What are you thinking about? I want to know because I hope I'm going to be there. Right. And I want to know what it is. What is tomorrow, right? And she looks at me. She takes a moment. And I hope I don't cry when I say this. And she says, I'm just having so much fun. I don't want it to stop, right? I want to see how your boys grow up. I want to see what they do for a living. I want to see I'm sitting there just on the verge of bawling because my mom is, you know, she's 83 and she's pumping and strong and she wants to go another 20, right?
Right.
But that we don't know what life holds for us. So,
That's true. I love the curiosity is not stopped, you know, like the love for like, I just want to see what happens next. Right. Like,
right. Right.
That's beautiful.
I mean, beautiful. The best thing you could ever hear as a son. My parents are like my best friends. And I am very, very curious about death and obviously about as we age and Americans age. I'm very, very curious about, you know, what is that? What do you think about? Do I have a couple of years? Am I going to try to go for try to be a centurion? You know, what is it all about? So I'm very, very curious because I'm a guy that's very much in my head, as you guys, you know, well documented. Oh, yeah. And I'm a doer. I want to keep doing. But when does that curiosity, like you said, just perfectly, Kyle, when does it stop? I hope it doesn't. Because that's probably
I think when it does, maybe that's the end of the line. Yeah. I don't know if everybody, right? I mean,
right. Right.
I don't know if it, I guess when it does, you know, those are the people that you see kind of just kind of drift off into the wind and, you know, but yeah, I don't think you're going to worry. You're going to have that problem there, Chris.
Yeah. No, I was just gonna say, I cannot see that being based on what we know already. Like,
yeah.
I cannot see that being a thing. Like Kyle and I are very similar. I don't, we're going to grow old and we're going to be looking back and Kyle's going to be like, when are we going to take a break? And I'll be like, what breaks? Like, breaks don't happen for guys like us.
Right.
No, it'll be some sort of grind. It won't. It may not be this grind that we're having today, right? But it'll be some sort of. We'll be having fun doing something.
Well, yeah, we'll go from building.
We'll be flipping NFTs or something. Who the heck knows?
Right. We'll be trading NFTs and playing cribbage.
We'll be playing. We'll be playing pickleball in the metaverse.
There you go.
Pickleball in the metaverse. That's it. I'll tell you, I think someone I read the other day that pickleball is going to be a league. You watch.
Yeah, it already is, man. Like I have a different podcast that I do through work, and we talk to the Senior Olympics in for the state of Missouri, and pickleball is like one of the main attractions.
Yep,
it's huge here in Missouri. It's crazy,
unbelievable. Yeah. I call it the local ACL league because I have seen more injuries to men and women than I've ever seen. So, yeah, but good on them.
I'll keep the compete, right?
Yeah.
I want that compete for sure. Chris, talking about working in the funeral industry, I mean, that's gotta keep you really grounded and not sweat the small stuff, in the day to day, So what was that like jumping into like making the decision? Like, yeah, this is what I want to do. Like, I know you said,
yeah, that was a huge decision. And I talk about that. For me, it was the birth of my first son and seeing him. And I had been a screenwriter in Hollywood, an unemployed screenwriter in Hollywood. My wife was working. And, when she had our first son, we had our first son together. That was the wake up call. I had already had the Peter Pan complex. I was a little bit older and, just seeing him, that was the motivation. Right. And I knew I was an attorney, but if I really wanted to be an attorney and make money, I would have to work at nights and all the time. And I didn't want to do that. And so lo and behold, a friend of the family was a mortician and always said, this is a great business. Got into it very serendipitously. My parents helped us buy a funeral home and I had to throw myself in. And, it was easy because I knew what I had at home. Right. And I knew that little boy and my wife wanting to be a mom needed someone to just, roll up the sleeves and get in it. And I think that was the best thing ever because it wasn't my true calling in life. I didn't have any training in it. I thought I was going to be the business guy in it all, watching our overhead, making sure we kept costs down. But
that wasn't the case.
It was originally, but then slowly as a family-owned funeral home, you start to wear many hats. And, when we were short on a removal guy, I'd go along and pick someone up. And, I'd go to I'd go to the coroner's office. And slowly but surely, you become indoctrinated and you see that a small funeral home, which we were, relatively speaking, you have to wear all the hats. And yeah, it was shocking, but enlightening. And again, I always say that the motivation was my child at home. I knew he was growing up and we had another one then coming on the way. So my entry into the funeral home really mirrored my life as a dad. My boy was one when we came here. And like I said, he's 18 now, right? So I've been here 17 years. Yeah. And that was just a great motivating factor. You're a dad now. You got to make some money for the family. Your wife wants to be a mom. She, while you were trying to be a screenwriter in Hollywood, she worked with you and carried us. So, it was a very easy transition.
It's pretty wild that first moment, right? You look at your son, you look at your child, your daughter, whatever somebody's situation is, and like there's just a moment where you're just like, I'm in it for this human being right here, for this little my little family that we've created, right? And like there's just a switch. You just go from like like you were saying, that Peter Pan complex to like, there's serious business right here.
Did you guys truly experience that as well? Did you have those that defining moment? Because you said it best, Kyle. It literally, in my brain, it was a switch. It just went like, it went boom, what, like that. Like mine, the birth, like it happened that I'm like,
yeah, mine shit, was a little it's different on. Because so my wife and I, we had our youngest early. So we were 21 and 22.
Whoa.
And so we didn't have any of our like, you know, really our young adulthood.
We were still babies.
Yeah.
We were still babies at that time.
You know, babies having babies at that point. Yeah. So we didn't, like, it didn't click for me on our first one because it was so early on that we didn't have a chance to like build a life or anything. So we were just two working parents, you know, our oldest, his name's Jeremiah. So he was with grandma and grandpa all day long. And then, you know, we went to work and then we came home and had dinner together and he went to bed and we did it all over, you know, the next day. And we did that for about 8 years. And then we had our second, and that's the one that clicked for me. Was our second child, because we had started to put a life together. We had moved into a decent place. We'd worked ourselves up. My wife had gotten her degree in medical administration and she was working in her field. And so kind of a very similar story to you, you know, where she had the better of the jobs and I was the one kind of sitting back, you know, I was the jack of all trades. I was the one just, I did whatever. I've gone from warehouses to lumber yards to, you know, whatever. And then I was like, holy crap, like we have another kid coming. I need to really buckle down and get something going. And that's when I got lucky and got in with a software company and, you know, became a software support guy. And I've been doing that ever since. And now my wife is able to, you know, with other things that we've got, businesses and things like that we've started, now she can be a mom.
That's awesome.
And so a very similar story to yours is, once it clicked, it was like a light switch. I realized I need to be the best damn dad that I can be.
Right.
And the way that I know how to do that is to provide and to be a great dad and to be a great husband and to be a great friend to all the people that are in my inner circle and utilize that influence to be better. So like when you started talking about that, it immediately, I knew, I was like, that's the feeling that I got too. And I know, Kyle, we've talked about that before. You had a similar feeling with your first as well.
Yeah, super similar. I think like I came into a little bit more gradually, like during the pregnancy, but like, it's still, there's nothing beats the first time that you get to see and hold your kid. Yeah. It's, you know, that bond that you just create right there on the spot is just second to none.
It really
I was a little bit older. I was 29, and so I'd established a business for a few years at that point, like, you know, so I wasn't still necessarily like partying like in my, you know, fraternity days, let's say. But you still have this switch though. You go from selfish individual, selfish couple even, to, you know, now you have another human. Like my wife was terrified the first moment we needed to leave the hospital, because she's like, well, you know, are we going to mess this up?
Right.
Who's going to feed this kid?
Right.
Who's
what the hell do we do?
Right. And, but it just comes so natural, at least for me, it did, like changing diapers, feeding, like whatever. Like I wasn't worried about any of that.
Yeah.
It just, you know, it just, you just have this responsibility and you just kind of innately, it's just, you know, I don't know, human nature just kicks in, I guess. Biology just kicks in.
I think so. And I think it's really important that other dads know that, because it's a natural feeling. And, you know, I think that's why a podcast like this is so awesome, because we need to dispel that for others coming into the fray, so to speak. And you hit it again. It's universal, right? I don't think there's anyone that walks out of that hospital going, I'm going to crush this shit. I am absolutely going to crush this shit in every way, shape, or form, right? You're all like, wait, can one of the nurses come with me? Yes. I was like, you're putting me in the car. And I'm like, hang on, time out.
We get you on consignment, right?
You know, there's no crying in baseball, Mike. Yeah. Right? You know, and I'm like, what? You know? So, no, it's true. And that's good, because, you know, guys got to know that, you know, no one knows what the hell they're doing. And you said it there's something innate. I mean, what's plan B at that moment? Your freaking parents?
You're burning the boats, buddy. Yeah. Like, there's nothing else to do. And you just figure it out. And Josh, I might have told you this last week, but like recently I had a conversation with my 8-year-old. He's my oldest, right? And so I screwed up, dude, and I screw up all the time. But like I was telling him, because he's I think old enough to kind of understand where I was coming from. Like, dude, you're my first, and every time you have a first, like your experience that you're doing, like it's my first time too. And you know, we're all learning. You're learning. I'm learning, and I'm gonna screw up. I promise. I'm gonna screw up, but I'm gonna learn from it. And I'm
such a great thing to say to a child. Such a great thing to say to a child. I mean, that is an unbelievable statement. And every dad and mom should know that, hear that, because that is so true, right? Like my kids look at me sometimes like, you got it off. Dude, I'm going through it again. I'm still learning every day.
My boy's
going to college and I'm going to be bawling. I don't know how I'm going to deal with it. I really don't. And that's such a great thing, because we want our children to know that we're not freaking perfect. And we don't know sometimes what tomorrow happens. I don't maybe know how I'm going to pay for that. And I don't know what, you know, tomorrow brings. It's really, really important. I think that humanizes us as parents. And I don't know, you know, I'm a little older than you guys. And when I grew up, you know, your parents were these revered people who stayed in the same career for 30 years. And, you know, it's a new horizon today. So I love that. I have said that many, many times. And they kind of look at me like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? You're the dad, you know? And it's like, I'm being honest, bro.
Yeah. But you know what? There's something to exposing vulnerability and even to your kids, right? And to, you know, especially as a dad to a son, like vulnerability is positive, you know?
Oh yeah.
And it's not weakness. And we should be able to discuss, you know, feeling a way about things, especially with each other, is then we can learn, we can grow, we can, you know we're not alone, right? And then work, you know, move forward and be whatever. Like, you know, you don't have to have this fake toughness to be, you know, to be a man, to be a good dad, to raise sons, right? So I love that
that's a very new thing. You know, and I think it's a great thing. I agree with you. And especially, you know, in light of the mental health of our country, I think showing that vulnerability is a mark of strength. I'm with you. Talking about failures, I talk about that all the time, how I think they're the building blocks of who we become when you're building your own house, so to speak. You brick by brick, your failures, you're learning, right? And you're building. Yep. And those things are awesome. So I'm with you 100%. The vulnerabilities, I think sometimes, especially when we live in like suburbia, we're trying to keep up with the Joneses and we're trying to, you know,
for sure,
you know, posture, I mean, a little bit. Ain't cool.
There's a huge difference between, you know, showing some vulnerability and talking through like challenges and like and even your own feelings versus like just being a whiner, a complainer, right? Like that, you know what I'm saying? And like you're talking about failures too. Failure is not a negative word. I mean, I was listening to, I think it was actually Arnold Schwarzenegger the other day on just some YouTube video, right? And he was referencing Michael Jordan, and somebody like in the conversation was like, you know, Michael Jordan, you're the greatest of all time, whatever, you got to be great. And he's like, dude, like, it's not about being great. I had to go through a ton of failure. Like, I missed 9,000 shots, right, in the NBA to get to where I am today. And, you know, and that's...
Right.
That's like, you know, just a out there example, but it's true though. Like like you have all these missed shots to get to the successes, right? And that's okay.
Well, look at people.
It's
like
necessary, Pete Rose, right? Not just okay. It's necessary. Yeah.
Necessary. Yeah,
look at people like Pete Rose. Pete Rose had the highest number of hits, but also the highest number of strikeouts.
Is that like, yeah?
the dude had like a winning record and a losing record, in the same career. And people look at that, you know, nowadays, and they go, oh, well, you know, these guys had so many failed businesses. And it's like, you know, that's okay, because every one of those failed businesses, they learned something. And I don't remember who said it. I want to say it was either Jim Rohn or Zig Ziglar. One of them said it, where they said, there's no such thing as failure. You either win or you learn.
Yeah.
And I tell my boys that all the time. I'm like, look, if something didn't go right, let's figure it out. What didn't go right? Why didn't it go right? And how can you make it better next time? And learn the lesson and figure out how you can implement that lesson in your next try of whatever it is. It doesn't have to be the next try of the same thing. Like, shoot, I'll tell you what, I tried my hand at you know, playing baseball, and it did not go well. Football even too. Baseball and football were not my sports. I tried baseball as a kid. Nope. Football, I got hit one time and I was like, uh-uh.
Peace out. Yeah.
I don't want to get hurt. And that was the thing, is like, I wouldn't have known if I never did it, you know? Right. And so I tell my kids all the time, if you don't do it, at least to try it, you're never going to know if you like it or not. Right. And now I've got one kid that loves to read and loves to draw and loves to build things and be creative. I've got another kid that loves to just run around like a chicken with his head cut off. And, you know, he also loves to draw and stuff. And he's got even better handwriting than his brother. And he's, you know, he's 6 versus his 13-year-old brother. And the 6-year-old's got better handwriting. But it's because he loves to write. And we've never told him, well, no, you're a boy. You don't need to write nice. You don't need to worry about that. We're like, hey, if you love that stuff, do it.
Right.
Be yourself. Don't care about what anybody else thinks, because if you don't try it, you don't know if you're going to like it or not. And back in the day, you know, growing up, my dad and my stepdad, both they've said the same thing that you did. Their parents were you stayed at one job for your entire life. I mean, both my grandfathers, one was a mechanic, one was a wood shop teacher, and they did that for 40 years.
Wow.
And so it's like, you think about the progression of them to my dad's, to me, to now to my sons. And it's just that opening more and more of letting them be who they want to be and not be worried about the expectations of others.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good. And I love those unique times talking to your kids, like you said, and telling them, you know, we'll get through this together. I'm learning too. And I think they love it. I mean, I really do. Oh, yeah. I think that there forms a better kindred spirit, so to speak. You know, it's the hard part in all this is you, in my experience, you want to be your child's friend. But invariably, there are times when you have to be the adult and the father, right? And I have a very difficult time trying to regulate that, because I think it's good, but I think they more see me as their friend, like their frat brother, and rather than their dad. And so when I have to flip the switch, then there have been a few occasions when you have to be like the dad, right? And they kind of look at you like, come on, fat boy, what are you talking about? You know, it's this, like, hey, brand. Hey, come on, let's go get some Oreo ice cream and shut the hell up, you know? And it's, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've started just burst out laughing when they just look at you like, oh, bro, you know?
what's the look that you get from your wife in those moments?
Oh, well, she thinks I'm just one of them, you know?
I got just another son.
Like, he's in that camp, you know? She has 3 sons and me, so it's just like, whenever she wants to go out, just go, baby, go do it. Yeah, she needs her personal time.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Well,
at least, you know, Kyle, in your case, at least it's going to be all right, because, you know, you're going to have another little girl to keep your wife busy. So,
yeah, we'll have 2 boys and a girl. So,
wow. When's the date?
Not till August. So August 29th.
Very cool. Yeah,
we got a little bit of time still.
And Josh, how many do you have? 2?
2 boys. Yep.
2 boys. Okay.
13 and 6.
Yeah. Wow.
So, and it's interesting though too, because, you know, you talked about the dynamic of, you know, time going by so fast. And we were actually just having a conversation with our boys today. So my youngest, his birthday was yesterday, and today we took him out bowling and had the neighbor kids. So my cool dynamic, just real quick, is one of my best friends of 20 years moved in next door to us, and they're a blended family. So him and his wife have 5 kids between the two of them. Oh, and so, and their kids range from 2 all the way to 11. So like they're right in that range where they're kind of around the age of our kids. And so we do stuff together. And so we did that tonight. And so like when Kyle said, when you popped in earlier and he was like, oh, we're rushing around, Kyle had hockey practice, we had birthday celebration, and we were just finishing up with cake when, you know, I came down and all the kids were leaving to go back home next door. But on the way to the bowling alley, my oldest was kind of like complaining that our youngest, you know, was talking about the clouds and just rambling on about the different size of the clouds, and that one looks like a laser and that one looks like a dinosaur. And my oldest goes, what are you even talking about? And the 6-year-old goes, I don't know. Like, and Jeremiah just, our oldest, looks, you know, looks at the, because I had him in the mirror, and he was like, was I like this when I was younger? And I was like, oh yeah, like to a T. Exactly. And he goes, I'm so sorry. And I was like, I'm not, because this is great, because now you're experiencing what I experienced. Right. And now I don't have to go through it. I just can say, Jeremiah, listen to your brother for a while.
Right, right.
You know,
it's so good. But,
I'm so sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry.
but it's that cool, like, it hit me a little bit. We got into the bowling alley and I went, oh my gosh, like my teenager is really a teenager. And
yeah,
he's, you know, he's got a girlfriend now and he's all this, you know, and like, yeah. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, and that age, it's like that innocent, like, oh, he, you know, I got a girlfriend. Yeah. But I'm thinking like, I didn't think I would hear that word for a while.
And yeah, good for him, man. Like some kids, it just takes a lot of courage to muster up, man.
Oh, heck yeah.
And he did it. He did it. He came home one day. He was proud of himself. He was like, Dad, I got a girlfriend. I was like, is it that girl? He's had a crush on a girl for a while. But it's all those dad things, you know, like he came home and I was so proud of him because I didn't have to coach him through it or nothing. He just asked, he goes, how do I do it? And I said, you just go ask.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he did.
Yeah.
Which, speaking of, here he comes.
Oh, okay. And so we won't embarrass him too much.
Wait.
Get, there you go.
How are you?
Hi.
What's up, dude?
We've been hearing all about your girlfriend. I don't want to embarrass you here because we're on live, but, you know, I think it's awesome. Just the courage it takes. I remember those days in my own life. So good on you, you know?
Yeah.
You know, the other thing is, you know, I think it's really important for dads to understand is the whole idea of each of your children, how different they are, right? I mean, that's sure. The other thing that I love about parenting and is maddening about parenting as well, right? Because like you said, Kyle, you come out of that hospital and you're like, you still don't know what's going on. And then you start to regulate one of them. And then all of a sudden this other personality comes along and you're like, what the? You know, that didn't work with this guy. And then my third guy comes along and he's totally different than the other two. And you're like, oh my God. And this is what they're talking about with a family, you know, the personalities in the household. I don't have girls. I have, you know, boys at 15, which is a tough age. And man, it is just, that has been one of the most enlightening things for me, is to try to understand parenting, which I still don't. How to regulate each one, and how do you talk to each one, and how do you talk to them a little differently? And, you know, invariably they're like, yeah, you know, he's dad's favorite. And that's the way, you know, they pick up on stuff, every little thing. And of course they grind it to, you know, into you. And I'm like, no, he's the little guy. I was the youngest. And, you know, I'm trying to make sure he doesn't get his butt kicked every night by you two. But that to me, I found absolutely fascinating in my last 17 years. How different.
That is so true.
Yeah.
Like, Finley's not yet 8. He'll be 8 in August. But, like, he's going through this time right now where he's just super emotional, more emotional than normal for a 7-year-old. I'm like, what the heck's going on? Like, what are we doing? Like, and you know, we got the internet at our disposal, right? And like YouTube and all this other stuff. And you start Googling whatever. And like, lo and behold, there's like this hormonal thing that happens in boys at at between 6 and 8, right? And it's like a pre-puberty type thing. And it just walked through like what's happening in his life, like to a T. And I'm like, well, what the hell, man? Like, nobody told me that.
Right, right. Nobody
told me that was a thing that I'm going to have to worry about. And, you know, here I am, like, and my wife were like, well, what, you know, what's happening with him? And well, now there's like a biological reason that stuff like is going on. And so then you figure out how to, you know, how to manage it. And it's probably going to be completely different for Ollie when he gets to be that age. And it'll be way different for the girl, I'm sure, because they grow at different paces.
Oh, man.
You know? And so that's just navigating the biology of it. And then you got to manage the attitudes, the personalities, and like the likes, the dislikes, the like, I don't want to talk to you, Dad. I'm only going to talk to Mom today, you know, or vice versa.
Like, yeah, I'm in one of those stages. They're only talking to my 15-year-old only talks to Mom. Can you just get out of here? And I'm like, I just wrote a freaking book about you, dude, and our life together and how joyous it was. And now you won't even talk to me.
Now you're making me a liar.
That's a microcosm of my life right there. 9 years coaching him and his friends from kindergarten to eighth grade. And a year later, the freaking guy doesn't even look me in the eye. Oh. Yeah. Seriously. What do you do with that as a parent? I mean, and everyone's like, you know, Chris, it's just a stage, you know? Hey. Fuck you! You know, I want that little boy back. You know, I want that guy that would snuggle with me and love the time of tuck-ins when we would decompress and talk about our days. Yeah. And he would ask me big questions about, you know, what happens when we die, and you know, massive stuff. You know, you guys know, if you tuck your children in, that's the best time of night. Everyone is. We're coming down from our day. I'm coming down from my day. And those, man, I can't tell you how many great conversations I've had with my sons in those moments and how that call from down the hall, like, hey, Dad, I'm ready for the tuck-in, is the greatest part of my day. I mean, literally, that is my time. And to this day, my 13-year-old still, I'm ready. Let's go.
That's awesome.
Up out of bed. So I love it. Yeah. Again, it's just being a dad, man. It's the greatest job on earth. It is the greatest job on earth. And I hope, you know, I hope everyone who wants to be a dad, I hope they can hear that. I really do. Because, man, I live the life. I live at the end of life. And I will tell you, go do it and enjoy it, because it is so much fun. I'm still having fun. I'm so lucky. And it sounds like you two are as well. And obviously that's why you do a podcast like this. And it's so great. And more men need to hear it. And we collectively need to dispel, you know, the angst that a lot of men do feel. Because there are a lot of pressures on men and women. But I like these podcasts because it's I'm a sensitive guy, and I want to let people know that's cool. That's okay. We're not perfect. You'll never be perfect. Don't try to be perfect. Try to figure it out. Yeah. Sure. And do you, you know, I think it's good.
Yeah, for sure.
I think captured the essence of what this is about, man, is
right.
Showcasing other dads, a lot of, like, it's got the slant of, you know, providing and other ways to provide, but still talk through, you know, what does that look like? And then how does that all relate back to like raising kids or even our own feelings about it or whatever? Like there's a lot that goes through. There's not a lot of like outlets, I don't think, that are out there to talk through those things. And, you know, this was probably more of an outlet for Josh and I.
No, and that's good too, right?
We get to meet guys like you and other guys that we've had on here to talk about those experiences. And there's so many things that are the same, but then there's so many things that are different just because we're different humans. You're raising different humans. And, you know, that's just
in different parts of the country.
Yeah. Right?
All these things factor. You're totally right. And like I said, I'm a little ahead of you guys in this whole dad progression. And I will say this, it does not get easier. It gets bigger. There are more zeros at the end of the equation. And here's the other thing. And this is where, this is where my life is at, where I'm getting to, right? So I'm pushing the first one out of the nest, right? And my parents are aging. And now I'm going to get all my kids out, and my parents, God willing, you know, they're at the end of their life. So life is really funny and messed up that way, right?
Yeah.
Because you do your job of parenting, you get them out, and the respite is make sure your parents are okay. I mean, again, if you're a good kid, or if you love your family, I mean, plenty of people don't, I get it, but I'm like, oh man, like this guy's over, and now I got to worry about my parents, and my in-laws are moving closer to me because they, you know, we're going to be the caretakers, and I get it, but it's nonstop, bro.
Yeah,
it is nonstop. Life is nonstop, and I guess that's good.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I had a conversation with my dad about this recently, and so my grandparents, so his parents, they're in their late 80s. My grandfather's 89, my grandmother's 87, and he was just talking about that, how I'm the oldest of six, so my dad's in his mid 50s, I'm in my mid 30s. And so my youngest brother is just now, he's graduated high school. He's in the military. He's in the National Guard. He's just got engaged. He's, you know, starting to plan his wedding with his wife. Or he's 19. So like, I mean, he's early in his life and stuff, but my dad was talking about that. And he said, you know, my grandfather, he's like, he just went in to have surgery on his lower back. He had some back pain. He just had to have a pacemaker put in. And my dad was here for Easter, and he pulled me aside. He's like, I don't know if I can do this.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, my kids are finally out of the house, and now I have to think about, am I going to start planning my parents' funerals? And I was like, don't think about that. I was like, they're like, my grandparents are kind of like your parents, right? They're like that. They're traveling all over the place. They're healthy, whatever. But things happen, right? The body breaks down naturally. So you start thinking about those questions of like, well, what if, you know, when, right? And that's the thing that he was talking about. And I don't think I've ever heard anybody say it as well as you have, Chris. And even my dad couldn't put it into words, but the never ending cycle, right? Like you grow up and you think, man, I'm going to be an adult. And then you become an adult and you deal with the challenges of being in the workforce and the challenges of having to, you know, survive and pay your bills. And then you have kids, and then you have to deal with your kids going to college. Then you got to deal with your parents. And then you got grandkids that'll come down the road. I mean, it's just this cycle that keeps going. And one of the reasons why Kyle and I started this podcast in the first place is we're like, there's really not a lot of places out there that dads can just be dads, right? And just talk about stuff that we're going on in our lives. And what's crazy is over the last couple of years, we've seen more and more of these dad podcasts start popping up because people are starting to advocate for the dadship, you know, the guys that are actually stepping up and doing the right things for their children and their families and their communities. And so that's why we started just really opening it up to, as long as it kind of went along with the idea that we had for the podcast and being able to showcase how dads are managing their life with, you know, businesses or jobs or whatever, and how they balance that with their families, as long as it's kind of in that realm, we welcome it with open arms, because everybody deserves a platform, and no matter how big or small you are.
Right.
And because we're dealing with this never ending struggle of having to be that constant provider for everybody around us. And, you know, Kyle talks about the biological component of kids changing. What about the biological component of, you know, men just being like, I don't like categorizing, but good men stepping up and doing the right thing. Because there is a difference between good men and then not so good men.
Yes. 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 I mean, and it's difficult. It's very difficult. And I think there's a lot pulling it at men. Again, I think it's both sexes, but it does seem to be like a you know, a male thing that is, you know, I don't know if it's biological or whatever, that we've been predisposed not to talk about our feelings. I'm very lucky. I have a great friend from law school who I talk to almost every day. And I tell him this all the time. I said, thank God for you. And thank God for I can just pick up the phone and know I can get you on the other end, because you've saved me so much in psychiatrist bills, psychologist bills. And it's just nice to even just to say, God, my wife was such a snot today. And I just, you know, just to get it out, it feels better, you know. And so I'm very lucky I have that opportunity to talk to my friend. But I agree with you, these kind of venues, because I think you don't understand how far the reach can be, and someone can pick it up and just see, yeah, it looks interesting, let me hear a little bit about it. But I love the actual dispelling of this perfect thing that we think we have to be. And that sounds like what you guys are all about also. And that's huge. It's huge. And it's huge for the health of men, really, honestly.
Yeah,
for sure. Absolutely. And Kyle, we've never had those phone calls, have we?
Oh, never. Yeah, right.
But
there's probably one like last night.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, you know, and I think that there's also some kind of a beauty in that, right? That when you, as dads, we find a person that is just our person, right? Like our, they don't even have to be a dad. It's just, you know, we find another man that we're like, hey, you know what? I can talk to you about anything. I can be honest and transparent with you. I can tell you the down and dirty and the happiest and most joyous things. And they all make you feel just as good, right? You know, you talk about the worst thing happening and you feel great. And you talk about the best thing happening and you feel great, because you know that the person on the other side of that line is actually actively listening to you, not just doing the, yeah, okay, man, yeah, sure. You know you
have. Yeah, I mean, I hope that's true. I hope it's true for most men. I think you guys are lucky. I think I'm lucky. I don't know that everyone does have that. And I think it's really important. And I think I think we're unique, actually. I don't know that a lot of men have that sort of compadre that they can talk about, you know, everything. I think there's still a lot of the veneer is up in a lot of men. And I would hope that you know, everyone does get that person that they can talk to. You know, certainly I hope that my sons become that guy. I kind of feel like I have become that man with my father. And, you know, we talk a lot as friends. Obviously, I know he's my dad, but especially as he gets later in life, my dad was a real worker, loved working, loved what he did. I saw that he loved what he did, and I said, I want that, you know, not necessarily what he did, but I wanted to feel that joy that when he came to the dinner table, he had joy for civil engineering. You know, right. It wasn't my thing, but I could see the joy in his eyes and his smile when he talked about civil engineering.
Yep.
Now, I came to find pretty fast that civil engineering wasn't for me, but I took that. And I said, man, I want to feel that way about my job, you know, or whatever I do.
Right.
And so I credit him all the time with, you know, helping me find my joy. It took me a long time. I tried a lot of things. But again, it made me who I was. And it's a great thing to love what you do and to find your joy, whatever that is. It doesn't come easy for everyone. And so some of us are searchers, and I consider myself in that group still to this day. But I think, like Kyle said earlier, that's the curiosity that will maybe, you know, provide the impetus to kind of keep going in life. Right.
Right.
But again, man, what a great story that, you know, where I came from, and even immigrant grandparents, both sides, you know, coming over on boats. It's just, that's awesome, man. Think about how easy our lives is compared to that, right?
Yeah.
Getting on a freaking boat to a new country. I got no complaints when I hear stuff like that, right?
You know? Well, that's and I it's funny, I can relate in a lot of ways because my dad also is a civil engineer.
Oh God, so sorry.
He works in he works with bridges and roadways and stuff like that, and so you know that's his specialty. And like you said, when he talks about it, he lights up and he gets all excited. And you know, the other day he was telling me about this project where he had to redo this whole trellis system for an entire bridge network that they're redoing out in the western side of the state. And I was he talked about it and he was excited and he was passionate. And I said, you know, I just hope that after, you know, 30, 40 years of marketing that I can turn around and say, yeah, like, you know, I can get excited, or even being in the technology field. But, and that's cool too, right? Is being able to recognize what we have that we're lucky to have now that our parents, grandparents, even great grandparents didn't have before. And the technology we have to do stuff like this and connect with people all over, and being able to pick up the phone and call somebody without having to, you know, dial a specific way or crank it or even, you know, telegram it or whatever, you know. Yeah.
Message in a bottle.
And to teach our children about the family, right? About history, about where you came from. I think that's vitally important.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, you know, they'll piss and moan when, you know, they run out of Oreo cookie at Baskin Robbins, but, you know, your freaking grandfather, you know, delivered.
Didn't even know what Oreo cookies were.
Right, right. Exactly. I mean, and the fathom that you could actually put them in ice cream at a later date, that would even be greater, you know?
Mind blown.
You're mind blown. Exactly. Exactly. That's, I mean,
could you imagine being able to be the history
of us is important, right? It's really important. And it's important for legacy. It's important to teach them a little bit to be humble. And at least that's my immigrant roots. And gosh, I want them to know everything about that. Everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. So, you know, one of the things I love about this so far, and thanks, Chris, for being on here with us and being able to just talk shop about being a dad and stuff. This has been great. And, you know, you mentioned it a little bit before, and you mentioned, you know, writing a book about your son. And I did get to read a little bit of your book. And, you know, the talking about being a coach and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, just being able to be in their lives to the highest degree. And, you know, that's, and obviously that's not the only book you've written, you know, the Life in 20 Lessons about being a funeral home director and owning that, and, you know, your book, The Wood, and all that stuff. Like, what inspired you to kind of bring those stories to life in text?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So first of all, I'm not much of a golfer, so I need something to occupy my time. I'm really horrible. I shank the ball all the time. But really, guilty as charged, right?
Yeah.
I think the most important thing was to leave something behind, right? And for my sons, as they grow up to be men, if I'm not here, that they have something and they understand how much their father loved them. And my books are all always about family, and they have that theme of family running through them, whether it's fiction, nonfiction, and that's important to me. I, you know, sometimes, especially when they're 13, 15, 17, they're not super emotional. They don't understand, you know, how could we expect them to be? I certainly wasn't at that age.
Right.
But I know that these will live forever, and that excites me. And it excites me to keep writing. It excites me to want to leave things behind, not only for my family, but maybe for the kids that I don't know, the grandchildren and all that. And I think that's a pretty cool legacy. I never really thought about that until someone said, you know, this is really cool at what you're doing. And are you seeing a pattern? And obviously then, you know, it was pretty clear as day. I didn't, for writing a first couple of them, because I was just wanting to write about my life. You know, the funeral home, I was living it. The book, The Wood, is about my Hollywood life. And, you know, the other one is about the basketball, the life I lived with my son.
Yeah.
So it was almost like I was living the life or the life that I had lived, and I got to put it on paper. And I think that's really cool. I really do. I think it's a history of me in many ways. And I think that will be, I think it'll be interesting or fun for my sons at a later date. Because they always ask, friends always ask the question, has your son read it? Or, you know, have they? No, you know, and I don't force them to. My little guy has picked up my basketball book because I'm coaching him now. And he's like, is there one coming about me? you know, so he thought that was pretty cool. And I said, I don't know, you know, so we'll see. But yeah, it's interesting that way. And
you know what you could do is you write a second edition and it's just a bunch of blank pages, and in the middle it'll say, go read my other book.
Exactly. reference 4 months in a lifetime, right?
Yeah.
So different.
Yeah.
That experience with even that team and his team and my older son's team, they're all just so different. That's the cool thing about it. To live your life with your children and their friends.
Yeah.
There's nothing better. Honestly, there's nothing better. I'm not much of a traveler. I always say that in my books.
Yep.
My true love, my true fantasy port of call. I don't care about seeing the Taj Mahal. I want to know the interpersonal relationships that you're having with your friends. And I, as your dad coach, am having with you. That to me is my fantastic port of call. And, you know, it's funny because my parents are big travelers. They are like, how do you not love, you know, we've been to, you know, Machu Picchu and all, you know, good for you, dude. Yeah. You know, that's just not me. And I think that's the cool part, right? And again, that goes back to each of us are so unique, and don't try to parent them the same way. Don't try to treat them the same way, because we're not. We're just right. Not. None of us are the same. And that's the beauty. That's truly the beauty.
That's what makes it interesting.
Yeah. Hells right. Yeah.
Oh, it keeps me on my toes. That's for sure.
Amen. Amen. Oh, yeah.
The 13-year-old is so, like, Jeremiah is such a just phlegmatic kind of just happy to be dull, right? Like not in a bad way, but just he has no problem just chilling on the couch and hanging out and whatever.
That's my people right there.
Yeah, right. Well, I'm a busy brain guy, but I'm not a busy body guy, you know, obviously. but the big thing is that he is very much like that. You know, he's very much like me in the brain style, but he's very much like my wife, where, you know, they can sit and watch TV and, you know, watch their shows, and, you know, they'll go through series after series, repeating them sometimes. And that's, they bond over that. And I love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then you look at my youngest, and man, if you saw them next to each other on a couch and you'd see Jeremiah feet up, blanket up, lounging back, you know, either on his phone or watching TV. And then you look on the next spot over and there's the 5-year-old upside down, legs in the air, right, you know, right. Flailing around, like, like kicking his brother, like, play with me, pay attention.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the thing is that Jeremiah wasn't like that when he was younger. He wasn't the wild and crazy kid. He was very calm. He was very collected. He was very methodical in his approach. And then Owen is just, it's like, we always ask him, like, who put a quarter in you? And
right.
Already, please. Like, so it's just cool that you can differentiate that even with your kids from a coach perspective and say, look, you know, keep coaching one kid to the next. Each of them is a different experience, and you're getting to almost relive that whole experience over and over.
Oh.
And I think
that's just in the first 5 minutes of practice.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Makes coaching easier that way. Yeah. No, it is. And the uniqueness also is that you're, you know, typically a coach gets the kids at the same age. And in my experience, I got to grow up with them. And that was the cool, true, unique experience from kindergarten to eighth grade, and to see them mature, not only as ball players, but as human beings, and maybe to drop a life lesson. You know, I'm notorious in our gym for screaming at the top of my lungs, I'm dropping pearls here, freaking listen to me. And I've had parents come up to me at dinner parties going, he's dropping freaking pearls. So, yeah, I love it. Everyone has a little fun with that.
Absolutely. No, you got to have fun with it. And I just, I like part of the, in reading your 4 months in a lifetime and how you talk about the different stages of, you know, coaching where you talk about going from, you know, these little kids with colored wristbands to being able to have, you know, they're teaching them how to differentiate the jerseys so they know who's who on their team, to differentiating, you know, calling out and being able to say, hey, you know, like understanding the voices of your teammates and being able to hear that from a peripheral hearing aspect and just teaching them those things along the way while also trying to teach those dad principles, not just to your kid, but to these other kids. Because,
right.
I mean, really, you're, like you talk about in your book, they're trusting you with their children, and you're almost instilling some wisdom into them yourself, and then they're going back and getting it also from their dads.
Right.
And so I think that when you talk about how writing your books, right, you were talking about your experiences. I relate that to you just, you know, dadified everybody who reads your book now, because
I like that word
about those. I mean, that's what you're doing. You're just taking your experiences and putting it down on paper and going, look, this is what I did.
Right.
And I think that speaks more than people who say, well, I'm going to write a book about marketing and I'm going to talk about all the great things. And it's like, where's the story? You know, where's the actual feel? Where's the connection? Where's the emotion? And so I find that inspiring myself, because it's not easy to put those kinds of things into words, because.
Yeah. And I think that's the good writing. I think all true good writers have to be vulnerable. Like you guys talked about.
Right.
I think I am not perfect. I'm keenly aware that I'm not perfect. My wife is very keen about that as well. But to share that and to write about that is vital, right? Because yeah. I think that is that universality that we're all going to feel, right? And we're going to say, he's like me, I'm like him. And I like talking about that, that vulnerability, my failures. I talk about a great story in Life in 20 Lessons about me interviewing with Mel Gibson in Hollywood and totally shitting the bed, criticizing him about one of his scripts, and, you know, didn't get the job. No joke. Stuff like that, I believe, make us relatable, right?
Yeah.
And, it's the hero's journey, man.
Yeah, right. Right. And I like that, because I want to be able to identify with you or whoever's writing the book. I want to say, yeah, that's like me. He's like me.
Yeah.
And it's a lot like watching a movie, right? That's what they say in The Hero's Journey, Joseph Campbell. You know, I want to identify with the guy on the screen, right? I want the average Joe who's going to beat insurmountable obstacles to become the hero, right? That's the greatest thing. Rocky, right, is the quintessential, you know. Yeah. I want to identify with that guy and I want him to beat Apollo. That's it. So, yeah, in a microcosm, that's what you try to do a little bit, maybe in the background of your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so one of the places I know, and I'm going to throw it up on the screen here, is people can learn to you, chrismeyerauthor.com.
Yeah.
They can head over there, learn about your books. They can also, so this was something really cool that I don't think I've seen this before. But you had a really cool press page that was put together where it showed all of the podcasts you've been on.
And yeah.
Even showcased like the names of those podcasts.
Yeah.
Not just showing your episode, but like you were on that specific podcast. Right. Can you speak? Was that an idea that you put together, or was that something that, you know, like you had somebody help
out? I'm sure
that?
I'm not that bright, so I'm sure I stole it from someone. But I do like it. I think it's good. It works both ways. It kind of gives a shout out to the people who had me on. And it also kind of, I think a lot of times, you guys don't know this, but, or maybe you do, in the publishing world, you know, when you're becoming a writer, you kind of send out these massive query letters to all the public, usually in New York City, and no one ever reads them, or once in a blue moon, you'll get a no thank you. But it's a very competitive marketplace, very celebrity driven these days. And so this whole idea of self-publishing in the Amazon world has opened this whole new world to people like me who don't want to take the time, and I don't want to write more Life in 20 Lessons and even more Life in 20 Lessons, what a publishing house would tell you to write. I want to write what I want to write. So similar toward those ends, it's important to have a page like chrismeyerauthor.com, and you put you. And in the hopes, don't get me wrong, that a New York City publishing house comes and says, hey, I want to buy everything. We love what you do. But, you know, heretofore, I didn't have that platform. So that was part of my platform building. And I got a couple very early on locally, you know, probably through a friend who hooked me up with a reporter who was doing podcasts. I think that's how it started. And then we started to build this, and people started to add on. First, you know, you're begging people to have you on. And then, like in this dad world, I'm becoming more of a, you know, a dad's, you know, because they see my books, right?
Right.
So yes, I probably stole it. I want to say from maybe David Sedaris.
Okay.
He's one of the great humorists of America. Mm-hmm. His sister is one of the great comedians of our world right now. And but so I probably stole it from him, or certainly the style of his website. But I think it's great. I love it. And, you know, it's funny because I was looking at it the other day and I'm like, crap, man, I've been on a lot of podcasts. And I attribute it to Angela. She's a woman who I met on the internet, just like you guys. And she's been a rock star for me, you know, just, you know, slowly getting me all these things. But yeah, no, really, I've been on quite a few now. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And I think that just, it goes to show, when you get on a few of these, and it's what we've seen from our previous guests, is you can tell when they've been on some before, and you can tell when they haven't, because you get a few of them there. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's like, you ask them a question, they're like, you know, and it's like, but it's
fun. Or getting to have real substance. Like it's like, pulling.
Yeah, no, that's right, true too. Yeah.
But you know, the cool thing about it though, is it just, it's nice to see that you're right. These days, you don't have to wait for these big publishers to pick you up. You don't have to wait for, you know, a PR firm to say, hey, we'll help you out and we'll get you on these places. You know, like you did, you put together this basically a bio page is really what it is, a bio site. And it's well done. I mean, when Angela gave it to us and I was looking at it, I'm like, wow, this is actually kind of neat. Like, I'm excited to have this guy on because it's going to be interesting to, you know, talk with you and just pick your brain. And it went really well. I mean, we're at 1 hour and 8 minutes and, you know, Kyle, this is going to be a normal thing. Like, we're getting to some really big time, you know, players on our show now that we're going over.
We're going to really have to edit these down so people want to watch this thing.
Yeah. they're going to start seeing our episodes and be like, okay, guys, when you were 45 to 50 minutes, it was a little bit much. Now you're 1 hour and 20. You know, it's like, come on.
Yeah.
But
there's
but
more no, Peace I mean, Meyer again. Hey, yeah.
Just edit out all my and it'll go to 45 minutes.
No, I think it makes up something of substance, guys. I like it. And I think it's really attributable to you two because you make it easy to talk. And I think that is the gift of a podcast, right? The lack of structure and just kind of letting the free form go, but having the insight to drop a nugget here and try to, you know, get something out of the people, the guy who's being interviewed. That's really important. It's very easy. You guys make it easy to talk. So thank you.
Oh, wow. Well, appreciate that. Yeah, that's awesome. And it means a lot because, you know, we do it because we're both still working and we both have side businesses and we're both trying to provide for our families. And so we don't do it often. You know, we do it every couple of weeks. And so it's nice to be able to, you know, hear that the things that we're working on is going well. So I do appreciate that. And yeah, we appreciate you taking the time to get on here and be part of our world and be able to, you know,
just give, shooting the drop with us,
dropping those pearls,
dropping the pearl, dead AF.
So yeah, dude, it was great. And any other shameless plugs you got here? Anything coming up that you want to tell people about?
No, I have a new book coming out in a couple of weeks called The Book of Moments. It's awesome. More of a coffee table book, just about the seminal moments in our lives, the birth of our children, the death of loved ones, you know, that first kiss that you have. And it's really just an easy read, you know, on a rainy day, just pick it up and try to recollect some of those moments in your own life. Sure. And again, the hope is that we share them with generations to come. Volume one's coming out now in May for Mother's Day, hopefully. And then volume two will be coming out in around Thanksgiving for Christmas. So sweet. Yeah, thank you for that shameless plug. But yeah, those are next up. So Book of Moments, volume one and volume two.
Awesome.
Chris is good, man. He got us to talk about all those things that he just nailed in his plug there organically through this entire conversation.
There it is.
Nailed it.
Yeah. He was shameless plugging the whole time.
Oh my
he's talking about is, all that.
I put it on a tee for you guys. There you go.
He's see? Good.
Experience. That's yeah. The gray hair.
Yep. all that wisdom showing there.
Oh my god.
So well, thanks again, Chris. It's been a pleasure. This has been amazing. And I love those pearls you've been dropping. And I'm never gonna forget that. One of these days someone's gonna be like, drop those nuggets. I'll be like, screw nuggets, we're dropping pearls.
Exactly.
So, all right, guys. Well,
yeah. Hey, Kyle, thank you guys for having brother. Me. You know, let's do it again because I think we could have another good conversation.
No doubt.
6 months, a year from now.
Yeah. Well, we're coming up on that, Kyle. We got to start making some calls because we got a few people that are coming up on a year for us, and we got to start seeing some year in review and how some of these stories have gone. Right. So, but definitely we'll definitely be circling around and see how after you get those book launches done, you know, a couple of those books coming out and stuff. We definitely want to be having you back on, see how those went, see how college is going. Right. That'd be a good thing coming up around this time next year. We'll be able to see
how you cry. I can already feel it.
All right. Well, thanks.
And I'll have Angela send you a couple of free copies of the book so we can digitally, so you can check it out. So
awesome. That's so cool. Thank you.
I appreciate it.
That'd be awesome. Well, thanks again for having us on. Or
have a great night. I really appreciate the invite.
Absolutely. Have a great night, everybody.
Thank you, guys.
Did you sign us off here, Josh?
I did.